Tú me pones un éxito. Si tú no quieres hablar conmigo, dímelo para yo no llamarte ni molestarte, porque nada más quedaba tú.
Real talk. Real people. Real stories. The He's Just Podcast. Yeah! Welcome, everyone, to another He's Just Podcast. I'm your host and founder of the He's Just a Social Worker movement with another amazing show for you today. But before we get started, I want to remind everyone that this platform was built because way too often as people, we were overlooked or labeled. But this is no longer our plight, and our fight is for anyone and everyone who feels a need to be understood. We are strong as individuals, but unstoppable when we unite. You know that laughter connects us, it lightens us up. It takes our burdens off and adds color to our days. The intersection of psychology and laughter is quite fascinating. You know, psychologists say that laughter has linkages to social interactions, emotional expression, and our mental well-being. Amy LaCour, a Navy-based born Florida-raised licensed mental health counselor who seamlessly merges therapy and comedy. She uses humor to manage stress. Amy ventured into comedy, overcoming stage anxiety through improv and stand-up. Amy's career also includes treating severe mental health issues in non-for-profit and forensic settings, now as a senior curriculum designer for behavioral health training. She's performed at renowned venues like Orlando Improv and Second City in Chicago, even making it to semifinals of Florida's Funniest Comedian competition. Amy now produces an incredible show, and she hosts called Psych, a stand-up therapy comedy show. She aims to foster a positive, non-jaded comedy community. Amy, welcome to our show.
Thank you, Jules. Oh my gosh, you're gonna make me cry. That was awesome. Thanks for having me.
I was all psyched and, you know, stumbling throughout the intro because I was excited about how we came together. I know that a lot of people who think about mental health can rarely think about the times that it becomes fun or funny.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about your journey.
Yeah.
Tell us about your walk.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I think the funny part, I think that grows up, like I grew up pretty poor in Florida. And I think you just have to like make light of stuff, right? Like, you know, people make fun of you and stuff like that. So I think like the funny part started real early for me. The mental health part, around 12 years old, we had some family issues. We went to a family therapist. And we walked out of that therapist appointment and I was like, I was 12 years old. And I remember I was like, I want to do that. I want to do that with my life. Like, and that was that, you know? So cut to, got my undergrad from UCF, my master's from Nova Southeastern, and then got into nonprofit in the forensic world and just loved it, loved it, loved it. Did that for, I don't know, 10, 12 years, became a mom. And then from there, I needed something for me. You know, like I'd always wanted to be a comedian. I always thought it would be amazing. So around 36, 37, I just like, I have to do it. So I started taking improv classes, started doing stand-up comedy. And now that's been about 6 years. And now that's how I'm here with you.
Amazing stuff. I wanted to touch base about this. As you were talking about mental health and how you began to think about creating happy times. To kind of foster how we get treatment. Talk to us a little bit about that.
I think that is such a big coping skill that sometimes we learn from our family, right? Like my dad is hilarious and he always would make me laugh and still does to this day. So that was a, you know, things weren't perfect, but I do know that we could always laugh. We could always have fun. You know what I mean? And then I think I took that into being a therapist too. Like whenever I would do group therapy, I had one group. They were ASD, Autism Spectrum Disorder group. And I did a whole series on how to use our emotions and comedy, right? So we did like a joke writing workshop with our emotions. We did set up punchlines with our emotions. We did improv with our emotions because being able to laugh and being able to make each other laugh, it's that deep connection. And it's a really quick way to get to the brain and get to the heart. And if you can do that with somebody, you can do that with your client, you can do that with your spouse. It's just a quick, fast way for your brain to go from, you know, not feeling great, depressed on all that good stuff, but connecting to a higher plane, a higher level. And that's why I think they're so close. Like, I feel like psychology and therapy and group therapy are so close to improv. They're just, they align so well, if you know what I mean.
I do. And you know what's interesting, as you were answering, I'm saying to myself, when I'm working with clients, let's say students,
yeah,
for instance, I'm always trying to find the humor in the work that we're trying to do. I think it alleviates how the work happens.
Yeah.
It makes the setting softer and allows the people who are involved, in this case, myself and the student or students, to become one. Yeah. I think that laughter really empowers that from a place of, we are in this together. It's okay to be happy. Right. Being sad necessarily isn't always the answer. How are you thinking about, for people who are saying to you, well, when things are very bad, like I had a loss in the family, how am I going to deal with laughter at a time like that?
Right. Well, I find that that's such a good question. And I'm interested to hear your thoughts on that too, because I think everybody deals with it different. And I think every family deals with it different. I know my family loves to gloss over some of the pain with laughter. There's that, like, you know, kind of like dark humor type thing. So I think it's different for everybody. Some people, they want to grieve and that's what they want, and they're not ready. But I know me and my family and my husband and my kid too, like, we are able to connect in that way where I couldn't miss, you know, my kid might not be able to be like, hey, mom, I'm sad, but they could make a joke about being sad. You know what I mean? So I think that that's a big part of it, is that it's all emotions, and however you and your family and your kin kind of like connect, it works, you know. But what about you? How do you work through that with, you know, being grieving?
I can tell you, you know, a lot of times, and for various shows that I've had here, on the serious note, I've talked about grief and loss. I lost my mom last year. I've lost brothers and you know, and things like that. And oftentimes what really creeps up for us all usually is sadness. Mm-hmm. What I began to understand is, how do we incorporate and empower laughter?
Yeah.
So usually now, instead of being totally unhappy, what I focus on is the good times that we had and some of those laughing moments. Like, I had my brother who he was just off the chain sometimes. He'll just forget where he was. Right. Unfortunately, he was caught up in between, you know, substance abuse and things like that. But there were some moments that were very funny. And I think that it wasn't to make fun of him in any way, but it's just a testament to the connections that we had, that we can still laugh about that today and remember him in a positive light. So I think that for me, I've tried to push a lot to remove some of the normalcy around, you know, bargaining and grieving and loss. Yeah. I'm tapping more into the laughing side, because I think that the laughter propels me to feel better and also reminds me of some good stuff.
Yeah.
You know, there are things though that still are, you know, difficult, but I still try to like push forward. But thank you for, you know, asking that question. Are there any thoughts that come to your mind aside from that?
Yeah, for sure. Because here's what I love about the correlation of therapy and comedy, right? So in therapy, we know as clinicians, there's steps, you know, to get better. There's, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy, there's, you know, EMDR, there's all, and you learn these ways to get better. What I love about improv and stand-up, there's also those same ways, right? So it's like, you know, when I was a kid, I thought everybody was just funny and you just went to New York and you were just funny. No, with stand-up and improv, you learn a set of skills to take your emotions and your thoughts and writing a set of punchline, writing rule of threes, improvise. So I love that it takes emotions, you know, comedy takes emotions and it puts them in a real structured way. And the outcome is laughter. And the same thing with therapy. So it's like, I think when we are grieving or we're sad or we're depressed, it's really hazy. When you go to therapy or you use comedy, there's a structure to get your emotions. So you're kind of putting them outside of yourself. And then at the end, you see this beautiful product, whether it's grief, whether it's sadness, but then it's funny. Like, that's just amazing, whether it's in therapy or whether it's in stand-up or improv. You have this end product of your emotions creating something beautiful, which I think is really cool.
I think it is cool. And I also want to add, the day that I leave this place, when it's my time to go, I want people to remember the funny times and funny things that I did. Yeah. I like to boast that I have a great sense of humor, and they say I'm funny.
So yeah. I love that. Do you have anything set for like what you want at your funeral? I know it's kind of macabre, but I always think about it. Is there something at your funeral that you want people to laugh about or anything?
Well, not really laugh about. I want people to really bring it down. I want some gangster in it. I want some hip hop. I want to make sure people are eating and dancing. I don't know. It's pretty like a party in my mind.
A celebration. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a thug's paradise, if you will.
I love it.
I'm thinking about different ways, but yeah.
I love it.
Whoever stays behind, just please don't worry too much about that.
Well, like Louisiana, right? They have the back line when you go to New Orleans, and they all party in the streets. And that's what I want too, because I want people just to celebrate the times. Like, yes, you can grieve and be sad, but also remember the good times. Have fun, be silly, be laughing. Like, I don't want you to grieve me. I want you to celebrate me. And I hopefully you live a life where people feel that way about you, you know?
Before we get into your show, let's talk a little bit about your path. There must have been times when people, whether family, friends, the system, whoever, were there challenges when you started saying to yourself, look, this is what I'm going to create. And people's like, nah, that's not going to happen. Tell us about
that. Yeah. Are you talking about like as a therapist or as a comedian?
Both.
I think the big part about becoming a therapist is, you know, you walk in as a freshman, you know, undergrad, and everybody there is like, you're not going to make money at this. You know, when you're a therapist, that's the first thing you hear over and over. And I think when you come up not having a lot of money, you have to really think about that, right? Because you just have to. Like, I think people that have, you know, that are rich or whatever, they probably can go into the arts and stuff like that or be a therapist, but you really have to think about your future. So I think that was really hard. And then, you know, my undergrad, I had scholarships, which I'm so thankful for, but my master's, I didn't. You know, and in order to practice, a lot of times, especially in Florida, if you want to practice, you have to have a master's and you have to have a license. So I had to go into debt. So, you know, mine, a lot of that was that financial thing of always like, is it worth it? And then I became, you know, a licensed therapist and running a whole team of therapists, and I at a nonprofit, and I was making $12 an hour, you know, so that financial thing to do your dreams and live your dreams, that was always hard. And that's why I am in the corporate world now. I couldn't live and have a family. So I'll probably go back to direct care when my kid's a little bit bigger, but so financial for that part. For stand up, I think the same thing, like when you are so, you know, focused on surviving and just like, you know, I don't know how, it's probably the same in New York, but when you're becoming a therapist here, you have to have a full-time job. You have to have an internship and you're going to school. So I didn't have time to think about myself. I didn't have time to think about comedy. You know what I mean? So I didn't start comedy until 37, 36 years old. And that's late. That's already when people have their full specials and they, you know what I mean? So I'm going to these open mics with these young kids, you know, young, mostly men, 18, 19, 20 year olds. And I'm this old lady at the mics, you know? So people like not having a space for someone like me in comedy has been hard. So finding that space and creating that space is why I created Psych. It's why I book a lot of shows down here, because I want to come with love and joy. And I don't know, a lot of comedians, unfortunately, getting this like lone wolf thing of like, ooh, like competitive. So that's not me. That's not my vibe. I don't feel good at a show like that. I try to really just be everybody's welcome and let's like make something beautiful versus let me kill my set and you don't kill your set. You know what I mean?
Mm. You know, as you answered, I was thinking about, you know, who needs a better sense of humor is government with these student loans. You need to be a little bit more funny about that, if you will.
Yes. Because
obviously, if they could forgive us for these loans and just be funny about it and laugh it off, that would be amazing, wouldn't it?
Oh, my gosh. That would change my life. It would change so many lives. Oh, and people that are pulling themselves up from poverty need these loans, right? And I've been paying on my loans, right? But like, again, when I was a nonprofit, I couldn't pay what they wanted. They wanted me to pay $1,000 a month. So, it compounds and compounds. And that's what, you know, 15 years later. And it's just, it keeps people from doing helping things. People don't want to be teachers anymore. People don't always want to be therapists anymore because you can't afford to do it. So absolutely. Make jokes about it, government. Make it better. Please fix it.
You know, I always talk about the profession that I'm in, you know, teaching, social work, and
yeah,
the work of giving back. I have also served in non-for-profit,
yeah,
you know, CBOs, community-based organizations. It's the feel-good story, right? It's the one that you go out there and you make change. You understand you're making change because you're getting community members together. You are getting people united to kind of see a common goal, to fix or problem solve. But right. Oftentimes the pay does not match that. So for us who are trying to do this work, please do not be discouraged.
Right.
Because there are many avenues. And I can tell you, for the social worker, there are so many things that you can create. I mean, Amy is proof of this. I am proof of that. There are so many areas that we can work in. We can work our own practice. We can serve in groups. We can serve team settings, for profit, you know, as administrators. There are so many angles. So think about this as an extension of something more to come, because the work is needed. And there are so many areas and gaps as we continue to unfold. And looking at the way things are now, the pandemic and so on and so forth, there are areas, though, that are still looming for me. I had a past show and we were talking about teen suicide. Mm. How do you relate the work that you do to those teens who are struggling with that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think how I relate to those teens, one, I have a teenager myself and make sure I talk to her about all that and just that space. Two, growing up a depressed teen, I totally understand that. And as far as how I'm relating that with my work now, I think what the psych show is doing is just saying that therapy can be everywhere. You know what I mean? Like everybody can, there's no stigma around therapy. What I always say about psychology and therapy, it should be like going to the dentist, right? Like some people, when you say, oh, I'm going to a therapist or I'm going to a psychologist or I'm on meds, like there's still sometimes where people don't want to talk about it or they're nervous about it or, you know, different cultures don't believe in it. I just like to promote it in a way that's non-threatening. And that, hey, you know what? Talking about this is funny. It's fun. It's weird. And you can create something really beautiful out of it. And that, you know, somebody that's going through that, hopefully there's hope for them. And you know, somebody reached out to me actually on my Instagram, on my psych Instagram, and said that they had seen a comedian that was talking about suicide. And they felt nervous and scared for them. And in my mind, I'm like, you know what, while I'm making this show, and this show is still pretty new, I do want to start building in resources for people that are having these kind of issues, whether it's in comedy or the youth. So right now it was fun for me, but now my brain's getting bigger. I'm like, okay, how can I make this something that is helpful for people that do want to connect with this art? So
good stuff. You know, being raised in Washington Heights and as a Latino, I can tell you mental health is not a barrier for us. We're out here sitting in the waiting room, diagnosing people, giving them advice, telling them what to take, not to take, the type of clinical diagnoses that they have. So shout out to all my Hispanics listening that we really don't care about telling people what their issues are.
Love it.
And we do this all while your name is being called. So I really do enjoy that because we really have no shame in it, but I do see a lot of positive in that. It shows that there is something to understand that we are all made up differently, that we all receive and take information differently. And there's so much to be said about those of us who are proud enough to openly share out, to openly support others. So shout out to anyone who is trying to support others in that way. But let's be mindful and careful that there are some people that really don't like to have their information out there. So if you don't know the person, just like be careful about that. Let's talk about your show a bit. Yeah. Psych, beautiful, hilarious journey. You have therapy, you have crowd work, you have some stand up. There's some personal stuff. There's questions. There's some diagnoses, just as I shared, there's some group therapy. Tell us about that and how we can venture and see you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. So yeah, the Psych Show is coming to Caveat in New York City, April 26th, 4 p.m. I love a 4 p.m. show. I love an early show because so much comedy is at 9, 10, 11 p.m. at night. And yeah, so basically what the crowd will experience is when I go up there, I do some therapeutic crowd work. And if you've been to a comedy club, you know, usually crowd work, people are terrified of it because you'll get up front and they'll heckle you. They'll be making fun of you. I like to turn that on its head. You're going to come to my show and get a little dose of therapy. We've done some like, you know, cognitive restructuring in our therapeutic crowd work. We've done some Rorschach tests. So I'm just really fusing the world of comedy and stand up. And from there, we have three comedians. In New York, we have Emily Flake, who's from The New Yorker, who's amazing. We have Kenise Mobley, who is from Comedy Central and has their own special. And then we have Kate Sisk, who also has their own Comedy Central. Oh, and Kenise has been on The Tonight Show, too. So we have a great, great lineup. Mm-hmm. And basically, they come up, they do 10 minutes of material, and then I sit down with them and I do a session with them, and then I diagnose them based on their session. It's not a real diagnosis. They can't, you know, they can't bill their insurance or anything like that, but I take whatever they bring, and I, you know, like I had one friend where they talked about relationships, and then we really talked about like some attachment, you know, personality disorders and stuff like that. And sometimes I'll make it up, like daddy issues or something, you know, so it's still fun. And I make sure that they're prepped and I make sure that there's no harm done. It's really safe space. It's not like, you know, you don't have to talk about trauma if you're not ready. But if you know, anybody that I choose to be on my show is really comfortable with talking about mental health and talking about their business. So and at the end, we do some group improv therapy where I get them all back on stage and we kind of process what happened, process how we're feeling. And then last time we did some art therapy at the end where I had them draw how they felt about the show and it was really silly and fun. So it's just the whole gamut of therapeutic, you know, it's only a 90-minute show. It goes really fast and we pack a lot in and it's fun and it's exciting and kind of different. Like you're going to come away hopefully being moved a little bit and just having a different comedy experience.
There's a lot to be said in what you shared. And thank you for doing this work again.
Yeah.
Thank you for bringing laughter to the forefront and for having amazing talent to come and join you. How do we find you? What are ways that we can connect to make sure that people who listen to this show or want to continue to follow you, how do they follow you?
You got it. They can Google my full name. It's kind of long. It's A-I-M-E-E. For Amy, and my last name is L-E-C-O-U-R-S. And then that'll take you to my website. That'll take you to all my socials. You can also type in Psych Comedy Show, New York City, and all the ticket links will come up for that. And we do have a couple of those comp tickets for anybody that wants them as well. And then, yeah, just follow me on my website. There's a little subscribe button. And then I send out emails, you know, usually once a month or so about shows coming up. I make sure not to spam and stuff like that.
Let me ask you a question. What is the best part of you putting this show together for you?
To see how receptive everyone has been about it. I was really scared to do this because I know I said in the beginning, I had terrible stage anxiety when I first started. So when I first started comedy, I was really scared to be myself because I thought I had to be a comedian, right? I thought I had to have, you know, set up punchline. Like I had to be whatever my idea of what a comedian was on HBO or whatever. So it took me a lot of years to get the guts to be myself up there. So for me to be up there and be my true full self and then be received in a way where people are excited about this idea, it's just exciting and validating. And I couldn't have imagined that people would want me to come to New York and come do this. You know what I mean? So just being accepted in a way that I wasn't expecting to be accepted in the comedy world is really cool.
That sounds amazing. And I think that a lot of people who are listening and who will listen to this podcast will be able to understand that creativity for you is at the highest. You're always thinking, you're always planning, you're always worried about how the team feels, you're always concerned. And there's a lot to be said about someone who puts a show together to be able to maintain and carry the value and content, but also to be able to make sure that people are having fun. Yeah. What are some of the greatest things that you can think about when you think about your show that have already happened for you that you were not?
Yeah, good question, Jules. The first show we had Donald Evans on, and he is Florida's funniest comedian last year. And he has this character of like kind of like a loud, mean guy. Mm-hmm. And he was perfect for the show because, you know, I really dug into like, you know, intermittent explosive disorder kind of stuff. And that's his character. So we're, you know, we're diagnosing his character. But at the end, so I also do allow the crowd to ask some questions too. I kind of call them like my psych pals so they can kind of interact because they've been watching this whole time, you know, in this lens of a therapeutic lens too. Mm-hmm. Also, side note, we had about 20 to 30 therapists in the first show in the crowd. And same thing in the second, like a bunch of therapists came out. They brought their whole practice. So we have all these therapists here watching this comedian. Like, what are they talking about? So with Donald Evans, the crowd asked a question and he has this joke that was kind of like a silly joke about a mobile mammogram. And it's very, very silly. And I didn't think anything of it. But then someone in the crowd was like, how does it feel to make a joke about SA, sexual assault? And Donald was like, what? And he had never even thought about that. He had never thought about somebody thinking of that joke in that manner. So it created this amazing dialogue about like, you know, what his character was. He's a mean guy, but also whatever we're putting out there, we can't change how someone views that. So we also have to be mindful when we're doing comedy, like, yeah, it's just a joke. But to someone who's a, you know, SA survivor, they could be taking that joke really, really differently. So I thought it was very, very profound to hear all the discourse around what's a joke, what's real, woke culture, all that kind of stuff, because I think talking about it is so amazing. And it was still funny and engaging. So that was probably one of the coolest things that's happened so far, that discourse, you know?
Yeah, when you have that realness happen without prompting is always genuine. And again, I think it goes back to what I was sharing before, you know, sitting in a waiting room and people easily diagnosing one another practices. For me, it's like when you have someone who is able to help us learn, it's almost as important, not in a bad way, where the person is trying to understand. Maybe you made a comment and don't fully understand. Let me share some content with you. And in that way, I'm very happy to hear when others are able to understand that and engage, which has me, you know, thinking, growing up, many kids as they're growing up, and we all have had it, you know, people pick on you, they roast you or whatever. How was it for you growing up? And how did you use comedy if you were able to tap into it then?
Oh, good question. I want to hear this one from you, too. I love this this conversation. Well, it's funny now, before I get into the grow up part, I get roasted sometimes in the comedy scene. I have short hair. People make fun of me, say I look like a soccer mom or I look like, you know, all these different things. And I don't know how to roast back. I didn't grow up roasting. Like, so I try to roast back and I'm like, well, you have dumb knees. It's so embarrassing. And I'll on my way to a show, I know someone that's going to roast me. I'm like, what can I say about them? But I'm so used to being a therapist where I'm therapeutic. It's really hard for me roasting. So it's a goal of mine to get better at that. But as a kid, I got picked on. I got picked on for being poor. I got picked on for being overweight. I got picked on for having, I had really bad acne for like 6 years. So I think those things definitely made me stronger. I think they made me really compassionate to everybody and whatever they're going through. And then it made me laugh because now when I do my comedy, when I do my just regular stand-up, because I do stand-up outside of psych too, I make fun of myself and I make light of it in a way that hopefully isn't disparaging. I don't disparage myself, but I talk about my body in a way that I didn't hear people talk about women. I didn't hear people talk about menopause. I didn't hear people talk about saggy thing. You know what I mean? So just again, making things not scary and mean, but making it silly and fun because it's life, it's us, you know. But what about you? How did that work for you as a kid? Did you get roasted? How do you deal with roasting? You got any tips for me?
Well, let me say, back in the days, we didn't call it roasting, we would call snapping. So you're snapping on somebody. But growing up, there was so much to battle. There was some social justice in it. There were people that will, you know, call you, label you by a race that was not yours, and you were fighting that off. And once they found that you had a reaction, they will stay on it. So learning how to do that, there were some issues growing up, man. I wanted to be strong so bad when I was young. Mm-hmm. And I was always thin. So I grew up just frail thin. I didn't mm-hmm. understand why I couldn't get past, say, 135, I think it was 150 pounds or something like that. But I would always eat so much. But I was long, you know, and like lanky. The one thing that kind of helped me is that I've always been ultra confident. Mm-hmm. I've always been superior in that way. And probably the good looks also helped me a lot.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I always had was swag. So even now, growing up as an adult and older, people always would look for ways. Now it's the thing about the no hair and whatever. Thank God for Michael Jordan and for paving the way for us. Because yep. that's how I got this and started that many, many, many years ago. And I've been faithful to the hair look in that way. So many a time, even working with my students, that's the first thing that they like go to. Mm-hmm. I try to always support people in understanding if it's a child who's struggling to say something, sometimes there's something that they're projecting that's bothering them. Mm-hmm. Helping them understand, think about how you would feel if someone were to say that to you. Mm-hmm. Think about the things that you have that are very positive and some of the things you would like to change. And most importantly, sometimes just think about how you feel when you are saying things like that. You have a perspective about this act or persona that you want to come off with, but that's not really you. I've seen you in other settings, caring, being a great fan, you know, friend. So like, think about those things. And many a times people, adults even, make fun of one another, whether it is about age, whether it is about how a person looks. Oftentimes I remind people, we're all going that way. Some of us are going to go one way, others will go better. At least for me, I will still be good looking even in those years to come. So I'm positive that things will be, you know, all right for me. As we continue to talk about your show, and how do you compose the, like, get talent, recruit people, your next show? What are your thoughts about getting that next move?
Yeah. So for Florida, since I've been doing stand-up and improv, well, stand-up for 5 years, improv for like 8 or 9, I have a really good support system network here. So I book the people that I know are going to be great at conversation. And that's the thing. Anybody on this show has to be good at a lot of stuff. They have to be a good stand-up. They have to be good at improvising. They have to be good at conversation. I'm asking a lot of them. So how for New York, how this happened, I had posted about the show on my socials, and Emily Flake, who's on the show, saw it and she's like, bring it to New York, you know. And what Emily has, she has a nonprofit where women go and have a comedy writing residency. It's called St. Nell's. It's about 3 hours from the city. It's in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. And so I did that last year. I did the writing residency. And since then, it just opened up this web of people that I've met that do different things in New York and Pennsylvania. And so that's how I was able to do the New York one. She helped me. Emily got me connected with Caveat, that beautiful theater. And then she helped me reach out to those awesome stand-ups. And so that's kind of how it is. I think it's like that in any field, is you meet, you know, you can meet your network. You meet a couple of people that really believe in what you do. And they're nice and kind. And then you just ask a little thing here, and then you try to give as much as you can. And then you ask a little thing here. So for this New York one, it was really Emily. That's Emily Flake. Follow her. She, like I said, she does comics and stand up in Brooklyn, New York City, all around. And I have to give her all the props for the one for New York.
Mm, shout out Emily Flake. Mm-hmm. People who open the doors for talent like yourself. Yeah. Are there things that you recommend for someone who wants to get into this line of work and not really the improv, let's just say comedy? What are just things people look at, people who are now famous behind comedy, but what are you advising people who think they're funny and they want to really, you know, take this to the next level?
Oh, I love that. Really start writing down everything. Right? Like when someone says something funny or you say something funny, write it down, get it in your notes. And you don't even have to write. If you don't like writing, like talk into your phone, your notes phone, right? Like, cause you think you're going to remember it and you're not going to remember it. Start getting that down. From there, there's so many different good resources. I use the Comedy Bible by Judy Carter, and it tells you how to take, you know, a thought and turn it into all these different types of joke structures. That's really helpful and fun. She's got some great information. She also does some online workshops that are free. She does like Instagram Tuesdays where you can go on her Instagram and she'll workshop jokes with you. And then from there, get around people that you think are funny, workshop your jokes, talk about it, try it out, see what works, and kind of get your, you know, your material together. And then when you have 3 to 5 minutes, then start going to the open mics. And y'all, oh gosh, you know, New York, Brooklyn, all the areas that y'all are in have so many open mics. You can go to open mic at 3 p.m. there. Florida doesn't have quite as much, but you just go to open mic, you bring your material, and that's how you start. You do your 3 minutes, you do your 5 minutes. And then from there, you meet people. And then, you know, someone sees your 5 minutes and they're like, oh, I have a showcase, or you reach out to them, or you book your own showcase. Like down here, there wasn't always a lot to do. So I kind of booked my own shows at little bars and stuff like that. And then you just keep on building, And yeah, for me, before I started stand up, I thought you just had to be funny, and I thought you had to be in New York or LA. But really, anybody can do this. It's just like any skill. You just do it bit by bit and then get your ideas out and you find your people.
I think that technology is a plus here, too, where you have outlets, YouTube and other places you can showcase your stuff.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. And if you get a following that way, that could also be. How difficult is it for you as you're looking at talent and people who want to be on your show, and sometimes you have to say no or bypass them or tell them you're not there yet? How difficult is that?
It is one of the hardest parts about booking shows. It's so hard because, you know, I come from a place of inclusivity and I want everybody to be on it. But for my show, there's only 3 spots and I only do, you know, the psych show once a quarter. But how I've dealt with that in Florida is I'll have my psych show, but then I'll also have like smaller shows. So like feeder shows, right? So if you have a show at a little bar and you can have 10 spots at that bar, they can at least get there. They can have a safe space to work on stuff. And then when they are ready, they'll come through, you know, the other bigger. And my show might not be for everybody. And not everybody wants to go up there and talk about their feelings either, you know. So that's the other thing. If someone comes and they just want a spot, my show's not for that. My show's really a journey, like I said, that beautiful journey. But I can, you know, if they're cool and they're nice and they're wanting to do better, then I'll be like, oh, you know what? My friend Brew, who's my comedy partner down here, has got Silly Geese, and that's a fun interactive show. Or my friend at Bull and Bush, you know, Ross McCoy, he does a whole really great mic and Saturday show that might be more of a late night crowd. So you kind of, I think that's the biggest thing, is really like not changing yourself for comedy, but finding your area of comedy that really makes you shine and makes you a part of whatever you want to create while you're up there.
Really do appreciate that from you, Amy, in that there's always an opportunity, and in your mind, you're always thinking about the person and how they're going to accept that information, and let it be that something that you brought back from your childhood, if I'm getting too clinical here, but an opportunity for you to understand that you leave no doors ajar. You're always finding ways to connect someone, making sure that everyone has an opportunity. That kind of speaks to you, to the person, to the therapist, if you will, in that you're trying to promote the well-being of everyone. And it's not just for the one person who you feel fits your show. Talk about the diversity. What are the type of talents that you get? Because many people may think, are there many Asians? Are there some Latinos? What does your diversity pool look like?
So that was really big for me because, again, in Florida, any show that I was on, I would say was 95% white and mostly men, and then usually maybe one woman. And then the thing about Florida that's tricky, too, is you go to different clubs for different ethnicities, which is okay, right? So I think there's a space for everybody, but I also do love that idea of, I like to see a show where I'm not seeing the same point of view. Right. I want to see different points of view, different ways of life. So anytime I do book shows, I really think about that. I think of the, you know, gender spectrum, different genders. So anytime I'm booking, I'm thinking about how can I curate a show where you're not going to be hearing the same thing? So, you know, I try to book people, first and foremost, they have to be funny, right? Especially for like psych, you want them to be funny. Mm-hmm. And then I want them to have different backgrounds. So in the one in New York, we have Kenisa is African American. Kate is a trans person. Emily is a woman. And that's the other thing. Sometimes when you go to like women's shows, it's always booked as like ladies night, like it's like a gimmick almost. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to make it normalized to where if you see all, you know, women's or they's on a show, it's not a big deal. And you see one guy, that's not a big deal, right? Because if you see a show with all men, you don't even think about it. When you see a show with, you know, mostly women, they're like, oh, it's a ladies, you know. I'm just trying to like normalize it all, like all that kind of stuff. And I wish in Florida where there was more diversity, especially with women, but it's not there yet. So I'm always pushing for that. Like my last show that I did here was for Galentine's, and it was an all women show for women, but I try to book as many diverse individuals because I get tired of just hearing the same thing from the same person. You know, it's a really important thing for me.
Yeah. And shout out to the women. I've often touted the power of the women here on this show. The fact that you guys have been able to, you know, whatever broken glass or glass mirrors, whatever you want.
Oh, yeah, this glass ceiling, yeah.
Ceilings and doors and whatever. You guys have not only shattered those, you guys have broken those open. And I'm so happy to hear that the mindset of the people is beginning to shift. Mm-hmm. I've always had women bosses. I've always interacted with women being in positions of power. But not that they are looking to be dominant in any way, but more around the fact that we're even, that we're balanced. So I do respect and admire that you're saying that. I want us to try to create something for our audience. Now that many of us, when we're family gatherings, we don't really have opportunities to be fun. Let's try to create a little game here. What is one improv game that we can play right now that people can kind of learn about? Let's try this here.
Let's do it. Yeah, improv games are so fun. Family parties, there's so many. So what we're going to do is called Mind Meld. And okay. Jules and I are going to do, I'm going to count to the 1, 2, 3. And on three, we're both going to say one word. And that's, you know, we're not going to know each other's words. And then from there, we're going to try to get to a mind meld. So each time I'm going to go 1, 2, 3. We're going to try to, I'm going to hear Jules' word. He's going to hear mine. And then we're going to try to get to the same word. Hopefully within five, if we can do it in five. Okay. You think we can do it? You think we can do it?
Fingers crossed.
And the whole purpose of this is to get out of your head and also to connect with the people around you. So you can play this with more than two people as well. So, all right. So clear your mind. We're going to clear our minds.
Mind clean.
Mind's clear. And then I'm going to count to three and you're going to say whatever word pops into your mind. So we ready?
Got it.
1, 2, 3. Corn.
Party.
All right, mine was corn. What was yours?
Party.
Party, corn and party. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, ready? 1, 2, 3. Festival. People. Ooh, people and festival. People and okay. Festival. Okay. 1, 2, 3. Mardi food. Gras. My Mardi Gras, yours was food. Okay.
Wait. Can we like solve the code here?
No, we got to get to it. We got to say it. We got to say it together.
Okay.
We're mind melding together. So mine was Mardi Gras. Yours was food, right?
Yep.
Okay. Let's see if we can mind meld.
I'm excited.
Let's see if we can mind meld. Okay. All right. Let me. Okay. 1, 2, 3.
New Orleans.
Oh, king cake. New Orleans. All right, we got one more try. Ready? So, king cake, New Orleans. We can't repeat words either.
Oh.
Okay. Okay. King cake, New Orleans. All right. You ready?
Okay. Hold on. Ready?
You ready?
Oh. Okay. Go.
Okay. 1, 2, 3. Po' boy sandwich. Ah! Mine was po' boy sandwich and yours was family.
Family.
We got close. So you can play that forever. And the more you know somebody, honestly, the more you're going to get it. And it's kind of fun because when you don't know somebody, you see their line of thought that might be a little different than my line of thought. So
That was so cool. You know, I found myself right after food. I was like, that's it. I got it. I nailed it. It's New Orleans. No, we almost. Got it. So that was so fun.
It's so fun.
Really, thank you so much. Such a great game to play, and I want people to take advantage of that opportunity. What do you do for self-care, friend? How do you take care of yourself?
Hang out with people like you, do stuff like this. Thank you for having me. Thanks for having this platform for all of us, and talking to people that are inspire me, you know, that are in the world like you are of mental health, but also making something cool, making art out of that, and connecting with those people. So that for me, comedy is my hobby. I have a day job and a family. That's how I self-care, just communicating, connecting, making sure I sleep enough because I'm 42 and I'm getting tired. So I got to sleep 8-9 hours, watch my shows, hang out with family, and just have a good balance. I'm thankful that I get to work from home too. So I just really try to strive for that work-life balance. What about you? What do you do for self-care?
I've always talked about I'm a self proclaimed Iron Chef, and I'm trying to be funny here about me. I'm probably the most humble person that you might meet. I talked about my looks and food earlier. Right. But no, I'm very team oriented. I'm very drawn into the work of supporting people and their abilities. I'm always for the underdog. I'm always thinking about the underdog and how we can propel to the next level. I never think about the word no and can't. Mm. I'm always pushing for ways to do that. And the ways that I do that in my own practice could be just chilling, relaxing. Oftentimes during the week, I need like at least a day to reflect and process just nothing, no sound, no people, no nothing to kind of think about my week. It keeps my creativity going. Obviously, exercising, thinking about the kind of food that I'm going to eat and make, thinking about the people that I'm connected to, thinking about the people that I love and how I can make them better, thinking of ways to support the movement in the He's Just world. For us, it's not really about he's just a social worker, she's just a comedian. It's more about the people who need to have a voice. And I want to keep uplifting this work because I think that is critical.
Yeah.
And so important to the next level, to how we are seen in the corporate world, in our own small little confines. I believe that people all over the world, such as yourself, have great talents. I want to be able to meet these people. So part of my self-care is always being able to connect with bright people of all levels. I'm not one to think about a person because they have a PhD versus a person who has a maintenance job. They all do the same thing. I had this show recently, it was just amazing, where there was a doctor who had shared that one of her best friends or a good friend at the hospital where she worked was the security guard. And he always talked about becoming a doctor someday. Mm-hmm. And in the story, everyone said, no, you're a security guard. How is that going to ever happen? And he continued to fight and like push himself. He went to medical school and kept it going. Long story short, she turns around and explains that that same security guard did his practice, went to school, came back, and his residency was at the same hospital where he was the security guard.
It's amazing.
So to me, that is where the self-care lives. Yeah. In the word people say that you can't, I always say that we can.
Yeah.
So any way that we can push that envelope for me is always thinking about the next person first, and then worrying about what people may think of what that looks like and feels like. So that is what's critical for me in self-care. I think about giving back. I think about time management, and I think about strengthening my community, if you will.
I love it.
Let's talk about a case. Maybe could be a client, maybe a colleague or a comedian who some way somehow inspired you, such as, you know, like the story that I just shared. Has there been or is there someone in your life or has been someone who has pushed you to say, yo, Amy, keep going. Do not give up. Keep pushing. Tell us about that.
Well, it's, you know, two comes to mind. Number one, my husband, you know, he's always just always been supportive, always getting me out there. I remember when I first started and I was just trying to be like, whatever I thought I was supposed to be. And he's like, just be yourself. Like, you are enough. You know, my husband always does that for me. You are enough. You are funny. You don't need to try to be funny, you know? So I'm very thankful for that. We've been together for 22 years. A lot of my material is about him and our, you know, our silliness in our lives and just being with somebody for 21 years, you know, 22 years. So him for sure. About a client, I remember one client. It was in that, that group, the Autism Spectrum group. Mm-hmm. He, we'll call him Chris. I had him in individual sessions for about 6 months, and he just had a very flat affect, never smiled, never joked, never laughed, you know, but we started doing those, the joke workshops in our psychosocial groups. And he, so he wrote, had a joke that he could tell, and he said this joke, the setup punchline, beautifully. He killed with it. The whole room just laughed, and you could just see it like a little smile. I hadn't seen him smile in that whole time. And it's just a silly joke. It's just, I'll tell the joke. It's like a street joke, you know. His, the joke that he had was, what is Bruce Lee's favorite drink? And it's water.
Okay.
It killed. And it just like, I saw him like fill with pride, and I saw the connection, and I saw the group look at him differently. And I was like, oh my gosh, this was, and then after that, that was a goal for him because he saw the power of it. Like before there was no like need for him to look for joking or smiling. That wasn't an emotion that was important to him. After that, you could see him like trying to do that because he felt that. And I just always remember that because I remember having him in my group and I didn't write him off, but I had already, you know, maybe pigeonholed him like this guy's not going to smile. It's okay. That's who he is. And that's okay. But also to try to push people in different ways or open their minds in different ways to where they're going to surprise themselves and surprise you. Like that was life changing. That was really cool.
I love that joke though. Wow. That was good. What do you see yourself now that you're moving around Florida, New York? What do you want to see Psych? And what's the next steps for you?
Yeah, for Psych, yeah, I'd love to. I've been submitting Psych to some festivals, so I submitted it also to a festival in Chicago. I love the idea of it being like a special thing in different places, because when you do the same show in the same city and stuff like that, it can kind of like lose its shine. So I like the idea of having it travel, go on tour. I like having, like I said, different backgrounds, different ethnicities, different areas. So that's kind of the thing for me. I'd love to do it because, like I said, right now I still have a family and a full-time job. I'd love to do it like once a quarter in different places and do that for the next couple of years. And I would love, love, love to get it filmed some kind of way because I'm not really great at that part. Like the filming and the editing, that's really hard for me. I would love to get it in a format to where I could have it as a show, whether it was on YouTube or more. I think that would be a really fun next step in the next, like, you know, 3 to 5 years, have it recorded some kind of way.
I think that that's amazing, and we will definitely keep our eyes and ears open for the greatness that you have. Let's talk about your show again one more time, happening in New York this month in April. We want to make sure that people have an opportunity to learn about you. What are ways to contact you to make sure that we connect?
You got it. Like again, my full name, AimeeLeCours. Just Google that in there. You'll get all my sites. You can also type in Psych Comedy, New York City, and I'll go directly to the tickets. Tickets are on sale now. There is some early bird tickets right now, $15. And just come on out. And the thing is, if I can get a good crowd out in this space, I'll be able to come back and maybe come back quarterly, bi-yearly or something like that, or other places around New York if they wanted to have me. So the more I can get out for this one, the more I can keep on doing it.
Go out here and support Psych. So now I got a little improv for yourself as well. I'm going to give you a set and starter and you kind of finish it off.
Okay.
I am enough because...
I am enough because I care about every person that I come in contact with, and I care about their mental health, their physical health. I am enough because I bring that light to the people around me and try to attract that to myself.
Amazing. My friend, the floor is yours. You can take off. Let us know. What about you? You want our friends to remember, our listeners to think about when they think about you, comedy, when they think about the correlation between finding the funny when moments are probably not that great.
Yeah. I think what I want them to remember is that their emotions can become whatever beauty or art that they want, right? So the more you dig into those emotions, the more you talk about it, the more you're going to find out what that avenue is for you. So for me, you know, my grief, sadness, whatever happened to me is turning into stand-up comedy and improv comedy. But maybe yours is your podcast. Yours is talking to people. Somebody else's could be turning it into art, turning it into cooking, right? So whatever you're scared of, that's like pushing, you're pushing down, you're not wanting to deal with, try to pull it up and turn it into something beautiful and meaningful so we can all appreciate what you've been through. And also you can see that it can be meaningful in a way that isn't harming you and the people around you, breaking those generational traumas.
Great stuff. Let's remember the words of Amy and let's stay attuned to our surroundings and responses, because these are the unknowns, the unpredictables, if you will. But let our vision never be blurred, because the objects that are in the rear view, they appear closer than they really are. On this show, remember that we are never going to be overlooked or labeled, because our plight and our fight is for anyone and everyone who feels a need to be understood. We are strong as individuals, but unstoppable when we unite. Tune in, friends, to another He's Just a Social Worker show coming real soon to another town near you. We out.
Please note that the views expressed here are my own and not a representation of my employers and clients. Thank you for listening. We're always here for you. Just message us and we'll get back to you within 24 hours. Thank you. More than just at He's Just a Social Worker. In memory of my mother, Matilde De La Rosa, this is dedicated to you, Mom. Miss you so much. En memoria de mi madre, Matilde De La Rosa, esto va dedicado a ti, mamá. Te extraño mucho.